recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. That's right, it's Tuesday again, and it's time for episode 24 of the Geocaching Podcast. Tonight we are going to talk about a little bit about what I dubbed Project Golden, which is our cache run that we did this past weekend. The reason I called it Project Golden is because it was my golden birthday on Saturday. I was 28 on the 28th, so that's why I dubbed it Project Golden. We'll get into that a little bit here, but first I'd like to welcome everybody to the call. I've got Moscow32 on TalkShoe Live and GeoAddict and Daryl W4 on the phone. Welcome everybody to the call.
Hey, welcome back.
Hello.
And I want to remind everybody tonight that if someone wants to call in, remember, we are live tonight. The number to call in tonight is 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. Go ahead and dial that number in. If you don't have a PIN already, go ahead and dial Geocache01 or Geocache02 on your PIN pad. That'll get you into our call tonight, and you can be on the show. First, I want to welcome everybody back, and hopefully everyone had a few chances to go ahead and actually do some geocaching this past week since we were here. Did anyone get a chance to go geocaching?
Well, I actually hit the big NERPA event on Saturday, though it was a little bit delayed entry into the event because of my sister's baby coming early that morning.
Oh, well, congratulations to your sister.
Thank you. I'll definitely pass that along.
So was it a healthy baby?
Yeah, it was actually the biggest baby the nurses can recall delivering through natural childbirth at 38 centimeters for the head.
Oh, man.
Yet it came out fairly quickly, as I recall. It was like 15 minutes of pushing, I think. So.
Oh, man.
She was, you know, all nice and happy by the time we got there, about half an hour, 45 minutes after they had wrapped things up.
Oh, man, that's good. Was it a girl or a boy?
It's a boy, so they now have two boys and one girl.
Cool. What's its name?
Ronan.
Cool. Well, I did some caching this weekend, and that's actually what our topic is tonight, is the cache run. We had talked a little bit about it a few weeks ago about how I was going to do it and how I had planned. So I thought we'd do a show this week on how it went. But first, I've got a promo from the Slogout Podcast.
This is Paul Kanopaki, a member of SLAGA, the St. Louis Area Geocachers Association. I produce the SLAGA Geocaching Podcast, which consists of conversations I have with geocachers and land managers, and audio captured at events of interest to geocachers. You will hear new and familiar caching stories from people of all walks of life who share the same hobby. You'll get to know the cachers themselves, what they believe, and what they do with their lives when they aren't geocaching. You will hear our experiences working with city, county, state parks, and conservation areas. I record audio at geocaching events such as picnics, group hunts, and training sessions. To listen to episodes of the Slogat Geocaching Podcast, go to podcast.geostl.com. And if you happen to be coming to the St. Louis, Missouri area, check out the Slogat website at www.geostl.com. Here's hoping your signal is strong and your bearing is true.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for that promotion, Paul Kanopaki. All right, so I went ahead and I've been planning this for a couple months now, our cache run, and I have had lots of documents and lots of different things. And if you go to our website right now, geocachingpodcast.info, you will see I've got some pictures that I took, and I've got some different documents and different things that I bookmarked. I made a document beforehand, kind of going around who had what roles and all that stuff like that. And I also bookmarked all of the caches that we hit. And I also had uploaded the breadcrumb trail from our GPS, so you can kind of see how kind of a crazy day it was. But first, I did go ahead and, while I was out in the field, I went ahead and called into our voicemail number, the 206-350-3GPS number. I went ahead and called in, and I had, so you can kind of follow us along here. I'm going to play that first, and then we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about it.
Hey, guys. It's 5:55 in the morning on July 28th, and we are heading out for our 100, our geocaching run. We're going to try to get 100 today. I'll let you know how it goes throughout the day. I got Mr. Bo Diddley with me and Corey Whitmer and Carl Whitmer. We're gonna try this, so I'll let you know how it goes. Hey, it's 8:30, and we're hot and sweaty, and we found 6 so far. I know it's kind of took us a while to get here, but we've done a bunch of DNFs. We're trying to do this real quick. It's hot and sweaty. I'll keep you up to date on this fun trip. Bye. Well, it's 9:51, and we found a lot of DNFs. We decided it's definitely easier to find big ammo cans than it is tiny, tiny things. But it's been a lot of fun. We actually met one of the cache placers. That was really cool. She was kind of sitting there at the park. So, yeah, that was cool. But it's definitely, we're hot and we're sweaty. And it's really, really helpful to have a computer mapping program on it to drive, so you can drive really close to the cache. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Well, we've just found a pocket of about 10 or 11 caches. Yeah. So that's really good. It's in walking distance. They're all in walking distance, so we're getting our walking in today. But it's giving us a decent amount of caches, so anyways, we'll get back. Hey, we've reached lunchtime. It's 2:08 right now, and we stopped and we made our lunch, and now we're back on the road. We got 33 down so far. We hit every one of those in that last pocket. And now we found a new pocket that we have to drive to a little bit. So we're still with a little bit of time driving, but I think it's going to prove a little more successful. So we've got 33. I know we're not going to hit our 100, but we may get close. So I'll let you know. All right, bye. It is 5 o'clock in the p.m., and we have reached 50 caches. We're going to try for a few more on the way home. Our legs are really sore because we did a lot of hiking because the pockets of caches that we found were on trails, and they were trails or hiking trails or hunting trails or whatever, and so we actually had to go and walk and do some hunting for caches, yes, but we had to do some a lot of walking, so we're really, really tired and really sweaty. I don't think we could have picked a hotter day to do it. But, so we might hit some on the way home, and I'll let you know our final count. All right, bye.
Well, that was the audio that I took while we were actually on our trip. We set out at from our house at 6 o'clock. Mr. Bo Diddley was staying with us at our house that night, so we just got up. But Corey Whitmer and Carl Whitmer had to come to our house, and I still had to load Carl's GPS that morning. So, he gets here. I had to load his GPS with all the caches that we were going to hit. We left here at 6 o'clock. We had to go to a gas station first because some people needed coffee. At 6 o'clock in the morning, it's kind of hard to get up and around. So, some people needed some coffee, and we also needed to grab some extra batteries. So, that was something we didn't plan for, is we didn't have our batteries that we really needed to have beforehand. So we did that, and then we went ahead and took off from there. Also, guys, if anyone is on the call right now and wants to chime in and ask any questions while I'm telling this, go ahead, and I will try to answer them for you. So we actually, from there, I'm in Goshen, Elkhart, Indiana area, and the caches that we were going to try to hit were in the Fort Wayne area, which is about an hour drive for us. So really, we didn't get started caching until about 7 in the morning, which was a lot later than I planned. So I think if I do it again, I'm going to start a little bit earlier. But we get down to Fort Wayne, and we have three different people in the car who have gone caching before, and Carl Whitmer has never actually gone caching before. So it was definitely an interesting way to bring him into caching. I don't know. He seemed to have a fun time, but it's definitely one of those things that you probably don't want to bring new cachers on because they still are trying to get the whole I'm standing on top of where my GPS said it should be, but it's not here. So we had to keep reminding him sometimes that it's not going to be right there. And even Corey had not had done a whole lot of caches recently. So he was actually, his goal, or Corey's job for the day was actually to run our computer that had Microsoft Streets and Trips on it. And the computer we had running that, we had two computers. We had that one and then the GSAC one. So Corey, what he would do is get us to a little pocket of caches, get us to the next cache. He would call out what the GC number was. And I was running GSAC, and I had a cool little laptop table that my father has built. And so if you go to our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info, you can see a picture of that. So I had that, and I was running GSAC, and we all had them powered with our power inverter, so we stayed powered all day, so that was good. Corey was awesome at getting us to pockets of caches. He would get us right to them. We would go find them, move on. And it was funny because as soon as we'd find one, Corey would start giving my dad, who was driving, the direction to the next cache. And right away, Carl would say, "What's the number? What's the number? What's the number?" He was trying to get it programmed into his GPS right away. And I was wanting the number right away because I wanted to read a little bit up on the log, the GSAC log, and make sure that we could actually hit it and stuff like that. So that was what we did. We ended up hitting not a whole lot in the morning. It seemed to work off a little bit slow, but then we found this walking trail, like you heard in the audio from earlier, that had, I think, 12 caches on it. And so we actually hit about 12 caches in an hour walking, which wasn't too bad. For walking, they were all fairly easy ones, and they were actually Mr. Incredible's series called Gas Savers. So that was a good one there. What I did beforehand to back up before this trip, as I ran a pocket query, I ran actually two different pocket queries. I ran one for caching along a trip from my house to Fort Wayne. Granted, there was only about two caches that were, shortly off of our trail from here to there. And so there wasn't a whole lot we could do. We didn't hit any on the way down. We saved those for the way back. But then I ran the other one, Fort Wayne caches, and I did the caches. I told them to find me only traditional caches that were I think I said 2525 or lower. I may have done a 333 or lower. I don't remember. But so I only had a handful of caches, but they were all fairly easy ones to hit. We actually did about, I think, 12 or 13 DNFs. We had a rule, basically. We didn't have a hard rule as far as what time, if we didn't find it by, we would move on, like a time limit. But basically, if we didn't think we were going to hit it, I would call, let's go. I'd call it and say, we're not going to find this one, let's get out of here. A lot of times what we would do, too, is, since we only had three GPSRs, and so what we would do sometimes is we'd have one person stay in the car, whether that be the driver or sometimes I would stay in the car, sometimes one of the other people would stay in the car, kind of to keep it so we didn't need to lock everything up and unlock it. Although when we did get out, all of us, I had a key and my father had a key, so we could run, unlock the car fairly quickly and get back in and drive. We ate lunch. We parked, got all of our lunching out of the cooler, made our lunch, and got back on the road because we did a bunch in Fort Wayne, but then we found some more in Huntington where they had a decent pocket of caches, which is another a little bit distant. So that was kind of where something that I would say we would change in the future too is try to find a city that's more concentrated than Fort Wayne of caches. I mean, there's a lot of caches around Fort Wayne, but either find it more concentrated or set a path of how you're going to do it before you go out. Because we just went and decided which one was next from where we were at. And I think that kind of caused us to use up a lot of time. Because we had time where I'm sorry, go ahead, Geo X.
Does the Streets and Trips plot out if you, does it plot out the best route for you to hit as many caches as possible, or do you have to tell which cache you're going to, and then it tells you the best way to get there?
Well, actually, what we did is I just exported from GSAC. I exported it as my whole Pocket Query as a Microsoft Streets and Trips text file, so I could import that into Streets and Trips. And so basically all it did is show me a map, a big map of the Fort Wayne area where all of the caches that I had in GSAC and in our GPSRs. So the map itself didn't tell us how to get to the next cache or didn't plot out what the best cache was. That's what Corey Whitmer was doing, is he was looking at where we were at, and he was seeing from there what he thought the closest pocket of caches or how to get us to the next one. He was basically doing our routing, whereas we wouldn't use our GPSRs until we got closer to the cache, and then we would go from there and say, all right, park here and run and get it. So that it's not the Streets and Trips didn't really do mapping or is routing for us.
You would think that UPS and I'm sure Federal FedEx all have things when they're trying to deliver that they have some sort of computer program that plots out the most efficient route. I'm kind of surprised, or I'd like to know if there was any kind of software out there that would allow geocachers to pick the most efficient route to hit all the caches.
Well, I know that there are a bunch of apps that out there that will do that, and even my little IQ will do that too, but the problem being you have to actually go and give it the list of everything you want to hit and then let it figure out where it's going to be. So if you're just kind of running around trying to see what you can get, it doesn't work too well for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for us, we would have had to go and actually have a list of the caches we wanted to hit first, not just a whole pocket query of 500 caches that are in the Fort Wayne area. I would have had to go and basically look and see which ones that I wanted to hit and which were closer and kind of tell it to route it. Is that what you're saying, Daryl?
Yeah, and that's the way that some of the teams that have done the 200-plus caches have done it, from what I understand.
They go ahead and see which ones they want to hit and only tell it, show those?
Correct. Yeah, they'll load those in and, you know, build their route around it and just go.
That's what I think I would do next. I plan on doing another one, because I definitely want to try and hit 100. I think that's a pretty cool record to try for. I was pretty impressed with 50. The total we hit was 53 caches for the day, and we could have hit a little bit more, but it was my birthday, so I did want to get back and spend some time with my wife and son and my mom. So we didn't cache like till it was dark. But Moscow 32 says, and he's in our chat room, he says, what was our total round trip distance? Quite honestly, I don't know. I know it was over 100 miles. I want to say something around 100, 120 or so miles, because we ended up, and that's another thing too, is we ended up driving to somewhere there was more pockets. So we spent a lot of time driving where we could have been caching, but and the bad thing for us is the caches that were really close together were ones that were like on a hiking trail or another trail like that. We ended up going to this hunting trail type thing after lunch, and that was all we did from 2 o'clock until just after 5. It was like a 2 mile across hunting thing, and we walked the whole thing down and the whole thing back. I mean, granted, we didn't waste any time in that. We planned our trip so we were always hitting caches. We didn't just go straight down and back. But let me tell you what, though. I mean, I think we probably walked, just on those two trails, we probably walked about 6 miles for the day. And when we got done with that last set and we're on our way home, man, my legs were hurting. We went from Huntington back up towards our home, and we ended up hitting some other caches on the way home, and I got out of the car and my legs were stiff. I could barely walk. So it was. We did a lot of walking, which is, I wouldn't do that. I would change it a little bit in the future. I'd try to find more pockets that are closer together, and I'd probably plan a route to do as opposed to just going with a pocket query. And another thing I think I would do too is we went down and back the same way. I had planned the option of going over to Warsaw and coming back up. So I did have a pocket query of Warsaw area caches that I could have done if I would have stopped and had to reload my GPS, though, because I didn't load all those. I loaded most of my caches for the area we were going to be in. So Moscow 32 says, "Aw, the hike is half the fun." Yeah, it is, and it was a good day. I did enjoy the walk and stuff, but it was, when you're trying to hit a lot of caches, it's really hard to do that in a small amount of time if you're walking 2 miles down and 2 miles back. So I did have the option to come back up and go up through Warsaw and hit some other caches, which I think would have been a good, and we probably could have bagged another 10 or 20 caches on the way home had we wanted to, and had we stayed out until dark. We were home, I think, just after 7 o'clock. So basically, I mean, we were out 13 hours. It was not all that could have been, but we had 53 caches, and for me, that's a personal best. Before that, all I had done is 13 in a day, so that's a pretty decent run if for only doing 13 in a day. Has anyone else on here done a trip like this? Have you guys done anything more than 53? Have you guys done that before?
Not as of yet, but we're working on doing one.
I've worked at it, and my best has been 12, I think.
Yeah, I think our best was like 36 on the way back from Grand Rapids. But that seems about the best time that we get is when we head out to an event or something and spend the day caching our way back.
Mm-hmm. Where are you guys planning to do your run at, Daryl?
Well, we had been looking at the Chicagoland area, but the series of caches that was really ideal for that, the bottles of beer caches, seem to have been archived.
Hmm.
Well, one of the other places that you might try is Hines Park in Wayne County. The Year of the Pig event was held down there, and they have, it's just this long set of parks along the Rouge River, and they have a biking walking trail along there, and I think they have a series of caches every tenth of a mile in there, not to mention the ones that are in the woods a little bit of a way, so you can really pick up quite a few in that park.
Sure, yeah, we had gone through there and cleared out most of the park before that event.
Hmm.
But, yeah, it's a nice park to go caching in, especially if you don't want to go very far.
Yeah, all of those caches that we hit in those two pockets, that walking trail that we had, they were all a tenth of a mile apart. So we didn't, you know, we walked to them, but still, even then, that took us just about an hour to do the 11 or 12 caches that were in there. I suppose if you had a bike, you could hit them a lot quicker, and that may be what we should do next time is take a bike, and so we can bike through those places like that. That wouldn't have helped in that hunting trail, though, because it was like it looked like they took a tractor and just mowed down the grass through this kind of woodsy, kind of corn-type area. So I wouldn't have been able to take a bike through that. I would have had to walk. And that actually was what took our energy out, because we did bring lots of water in the car, but unfortunately, Daryl, and I know we've talked about this before, I forgot to bring it out with us while we were actually walking, and so we were getting pretty tired by the end of our walk, and that was a mistake on our part too.
Yeah, that will certainly do you in.
So yeah, I mean, we definitely ate enough during lunch and stuff like that, but we both, and what makes me mad is because the first trail, which wasn't too bad that we hit, because it was like a pea gravel type of stuff, like a limestone trail, and that one wasn't, I mean, it was still hot out. It was probably, I think, about noon when we hit that. So it was fairly warm, and we didn't bring our water on that. And I got thirsty by the end, and the second trail that we hit, I should have remembered, and I didn't. It made me so mad. I was kicking myself once we were out. So, but that was pretty much our day. Like I said, we hit 50, and I'm like, I gotta hit a couple more. We did a bunch of ISQs, the Indiana Spirit Quests. Those are fairly easy to hit, so we did hit, and there are a bunch of them down there. So we hit a bunch of those. The things that took a while, we were getting kind of discouraged because we tried to hit a bunch of Mr. Incredible stuff, and we were DNFing a bunch of them. We couldn't find them, so we were beginning to think that we weren't gonna be able to find any of his stuff. But we ended up finding a couple of his, and so we knew that he couldn't completely outsmart us. So that was a good feeling too.
Yeah, some of his hides are fairly tricky.
We hit one that was really clever. It was one of his in his Pixar Pals series from A Bug's Life, and it was actually in like this bug-type container. It was pretty clever.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of his easier ones still are camoed well enough that they're kind of hard to find.
Yeah. So, yeah, we hit... it was kind of discouraging to have to DNF so many of them that I know that if we could have just spent a little more time there, we probably would have found them, but I didn't want to spend too much time. Now, and here's a story too. Well, we were going to hit this cache that was on a corner in this downtown area of Fort Wayne, or a city close to Fort Wayne. And it was actually on a corner. There's this nice little like park and park benches, and it's one of those you pull up and you're like, it's gotta be under the park bench because it's a magnet. I'm pretty sure it said it was magnet, and I'm pretty sure it was there. So we knew where it was gonna be. As we were pulling, not through the intersection, but up to the intersection, we saw this truck clip the corner right where the park is at. Like, and he hit the lamppost, and it actually went up in the air, and it had this big plant potter thing on top of it. It went way up in the air and came down, and the next thing I see is this guy running up to the truck and jump in and stop it before it crosses the other corner and into the building. It had just jumped up onto the other curb and started heading for a building. So we pulled over, ran over there real quick, and the guy was having a seizure. He was passed out, and he was, like, foaming at the mouth, and his eyes were all rolled back, and we and a bunch of other people got him, you know, face down so he wasn't going to vomit and suffocate himself. But we got him. So that actually is another thing that took up our time, because I was talking to the 911. I called 911 and was talking to the lady there. So... But it was a good thing that some of our caches took a little bit longer than we expected, because we could have been standing right on that corner if we were looking under the lamppost or wherever. We could have been right on that corner as he drove through. I think he was all right. We actually left before the cops had got there and the ambulance was there and stuff. So we left at that point. But, yeah, it was definitely a new thing for me. I've never seen anyone, especially on a caching trip, just do that. And he was lucky because he didn't run into the building. He didn't run into another car. But he was definitely lucky that he got away with very little damage to himself or to his car. So, yeah, that was definitely interesting.
Yeah, that's quite the story to be telling from a caching blitz.
Yeah, it was. And it costed us some time, too, because I mean, we probably spent 15 minutes there on the phone and trying to help him. You know, it's one of those things that you don't really want to stop because you're trying to get caches, but as a good citizen, you feel like you need to. So we did, because we did feel like we needed to. We did stop and try to help him out. But, yeah, that was definitely – we don't know if he was just doing drugs, or we don't know if he had, you know, just passed out, or we don't know what was going on. But, yeah, it was definitely an interesting/scary moment in our trip.
I would imagine so.
But that was pretty much it for our trip. I really enjoyed it. One of the cool things that I really also enjoyed is with GSAC, the way that what I did is I marked all of them as found in it, and I wrote a log note in GSAC, and then I also had ordered it so I knew what numbers were what and how when I found them. And then I have a macro that actually went ahead and went through all of my list of found ones and called up the log page on GC, and all I had to do is paste, you know, hit Control V and paste my log and hit OK. So logging 52 caches was fairly good. I think it took me probably 10 or 15 minutes to do it, so it wasn't too long. So that was a good thing. I wouldn't want to try that many caches by hand, because it would have taken me forever to write logs on them, and they probably would have all just said, you know, TFTC. So that was one thing that I would definitely suggest if you guys decide to do this is make sure you get used to using geocaching Swiss Army knife and employ it. Like I said, I took it right in the car with me. I had my laptop. Now, you could also use, you know, your palm or your other item like that to do the same type of thing. So, Daryl, do you guys have an idea of how you guys are going to go about doing that when you guys go on your trip?
Well, what we typically do is log through the WAP site on the phones. And all we do is put the time in there, and then we'll go back and finish up the logs later.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, for those of you who don't know it, it's just the website is wap.geocaching.com, and you can call it right up on your phone, especially if you have a pretty decent data plan. It's a little bit – I use it a lot. We even used it when we were on a trip when we were out sometimes at the cache site, and we just couldn't find it or whatever. I would call up the WAP for geocaching, and I would look up the GC number, and I would, you know, get a hint or whatever that I needed to, because I didn't bring my laptop with me in the field. I left it in the car and left it powered up, and so that worked. That worked fairly well.
At least once we actually had one of the caches we were looking for be disabled while we were out in the field. So.
While you were in the field.
Yeah, sometime after we left the house that morning, the cache had been disabled, so it vanished.
That's never good, especially when you're in the midst of trying to find it.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons we love that WAP interface, is you bring it up and it says disabled.
Yeah. And it's fairly quick, too. I mean, you guys can get hints, you can see the logs that are there. So especially if you're out only hitting one or two and you may not have the sheets with you, it's pretty handy. It's a pretty handy thing to do. One of the things you kind of briefly heard me say this in the phone message when I played that back, but we went to hit one of the caches and we pulled up and there was a lady sitting. We could definitely tell that the cache was back in the woods a little bit, and there's a lady sitting down on the log. There's a log like where we park at, and she was sitting there. We ran into the forest, and we signed it, and we came back out, running back out, and she said, "Did you find it?" And we said, "Yeah." She said, "It's my cache." And so that was kind of cool, and we actually hit quite a bit of caches from her that day, so it was kind of cool to be able to have met her and also be doing a bunch of her caches. So that was pretty interesting. We also got, in that same park, there was another cache, because that lady said, "Did you find it?" You know, "It's mine." She said, "There's other caches here." And I said, "Yeah, we know. We've already hit them." But before that, when we were going to find the other ones, we were running up to magnet key thing, and we knew exactly where it was at. And so we were running towards it. And this lady said, "Are you guys on a scavenger hunt?" And we said, "Yeah, actually we are." And she said, "With what group?" And I kind of said, "Geocaching, it's kind of a high-tech scavenger hunt kind of thing." And it's one of those times that you're trying to not spend a whole lot of time, but you don't want to completely blow the lady off either. So it was kind of interesting. I'm wondering if she didn't know about geocaching, and she was just trying to see what I would say, to see if, you know, maybe she wasn't a muggle. Maybe she actually was a cacher or a cache placer herself. But it was, I mean, because just kind of the way she said it, "Are you guys on a scavenger hunt?" I mean, I don't think I've ever had anyone ask me that when I was in the field. People ask me what I'm doing, but they never ask me if I'm on a scavenger hunt. So that was an interesting one, too. So I am planning on doing another one of these cache runs. I don't know when yet. I don't have a scheduled date. But I would suggest when you guys do it, make a planning sheet. You can kind of, if you go to our website, the geocachingpodcast.info, you can see I have in our show notes, I shared with you guys the the planning page that I had kind of created for our trip, I kind of listed out what we needed, who it was that was going to be caching with us, where we were planning on caching. I did a Google map and put it in there and also showed our stats and other stuff like that. So you can see that page. I would recommend doing that so you kind of remember the type, the stuff that you need when you're on this cache run. Does anyone have any questions before we wrap up here? We've gone 35 minutes so far. Any questions about our Project Golden run?
No, I think I'm good.
No, it was a good story, and congratulations on 53. That's a good number anyhow.
Thanks. Yeah, I was hoping to get. I think I needed 72 to get my 200 caches, and I was hoping for that, but didn't quite get to it. So I'm hoping that I get to go out and hit enough to get my 200 before the end of the summer. So Moscow 32, do you have any other comments or questions before we get off this phone call here? You can just go ahead and type them in. Guys, remember that this show is recorded live on Tuesdays, and you can call in 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. And if you don't feel like calling in, you can just come to our chat like Moscow32 has. He's in the chat room, and we all can see him, and he can see us, and we can chat back and forth. Or you can just stream live right from the TalkShoe.com website if you want to listen live. So those are the different ways to listen to us. And remember, guys, that our show notes are at geocachingpodcast.info. So I also, if you didn't catch us on a previous episode, I did create a Twitter account for the Geocaching Podcast. It's just the name is GC Podcast, and you can go ahead and follow that, and I'll send you updates and stuff like that about and remind you guys that we're going to be live. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and end the show. We hope to see you all here next week. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a good night. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.